This hour, we're talking about the resilient brain and about how humans, as a species, are wired to respond to trauma. I think we're all wondering how this collective experience with COVID-19 will change us, not just this year or the year after, but for decades to come.
My impression is that this will be a cataclysmic event that will populate the collective imagination for many, many years to come. It will leave scars that centuries from now people will still refer to. It will manifest itself in movies, in music, in theater, in dance, in sculptures, on television, and of course in literature. It is very deep, and at the same time, it's externally embracing us all.
Ilan Stavins is a cultural critic and literary scholar. A few months ago, he put out a call to writers around the world, asking them to share what they've been thinking and writing about the pandemic. He's just published an anthology of COVID-related writing called And We Came Outside and Saw the Stars Again. The title is from the last line of Dante's Inferno, when the poet finally emerges from hell. Charles Monroe Cain, who says social isolation is his personal definition of hell, asks Stavins how he thinks everybody's doing.
What strikes me about this pandemic is that it comes just as we were having this ferocious debate on globalism. Does it matter? Should it last? Is it better to become more patriotic, more nationalistic, to close the borders, to build big walls, to cut away from our neighbors, to be only for ourselves? And ironically, it is the pandemic that has made us truly, truly global. We're all experiencing the same ways, having the same fears and similar dreams and similar reactions to nature and silence. So there is this quality in the anthology that makes it very clear where each of the writers is coming from in terms of culture, but also that there's something that goes beyond culture and that brings us all together.
You know, it's true. I have a lot of friends in New York, and things got really hard in New York, but I used to live in Prague and Amsterdam, and I have a lot of friends there. Everyone, they were doing their best. It makes me think about one of the people in your book, the American poet Jane Hirschfield, and she has a poem about saving an ant. Could you read that poem?
Of course. It's one of my favorite poems. Jane Hirschfield is an American writer, and she wrote this poem in Mill Valley, California. She dates it on March 7, of course, of 2020. The title of the poem is Today When I Could Do Nothing. It goes like this. Today, when I could do nothing, I saved an ant. It must have come in with a morning paper, still being delivered to those who shelter in place. A morning paper is still an essential service. I am not an essential service. I have coffee and books, time, a garden, silence enough to fill cisterns. It must have first walked the morning paper as if loosened ink taking the shape of an ant. Then across the laptop computer, warm, then onto the back of a cushion. Small black ant, alone, crossing a navy cushion, moving steadily because that is what it could do. Set outside in the sun, it could have found again its nest. What den did I save? It did not look as if it was frightened, even while walking my hand, which moved it through swiftness and air. Ant, alone, without companions, whose ant heart I could not fathom. How is your life? I wanted to ask. I lifted it, took it outside. This first day, when I could do nothing, contribute nothing beyond staying distant from my own kind. I did this.
It's beautiful. Actually, hearing you read it, I was just choked up. I totally get it. You have another poem that I love called Quarantine by the Irish poet Evian Boland, I think we should point out here that she is no longer with us. She has died since she wrote the poem. Do you know if she was sick when she submitted this poem to you?
Evan Boland, really an astonishing Irish poet, taught for many years at Stanford. And when Stanford decided to send everybody home, she went back to Dublin and was ready to start teaching remotely from there when she suffered a fatal heart attack. It was at the beginning of the pandemic. It felt as if the pandemic had pushed her to this end. I had seen her in Stanford very, very briefly, just a couple of months before. I had sent her a request to use this poem in the book. And it felt as if, when I read the news the next day, as if the world was really becoming smaller and poorer and colder, because to me, she was one of the most important voices of her generation.
Do you mind reading her poem?
Of course, with pleasure, and it would be an honor. It's called Quarantine. In the worst hour of the worst season, of the worst year of a whole people, a man set out from the workhouse with his wife. He was walking. They were both walking north. She was sick with famine fever and could not keep up. He lifted her and put her on his back. He walked like that west and west and north until at nightfall, under freezing stars, they arrived. In the morning, they were both found dead of cold, of hunger, of the toxins of a whole history. But her feet were held against his breastbone. The last heat of his flesh was his last gift to her. Let no love poem ever come to this threshold. There is no place here for the inexact praise of the easy graces and sensuality of the body. There is only time for this merciless inventory. Their death together in the winter of 1847. Also, what they suffered, how they lived, and what there is between a man and woman, and in which darkness it can best be proved. It's a beautiful poem.
Is, you know what? It's kind of perfect. It's a perfect poem. And I read it to my wife, and I was wondering when I read it, because of the gender, I put myself in the role of the man carrying the woman, but knowing my relationship with my wife, honestly, I'm the woman, you know, being carried. And boy, that really hit home for how the pandemic was for me. It must have hit home for you when she passed. What was that like finding out?
It was very painful. And I because it's very painful, Charles, when you know somebody and you admire them, and then you know that their narrative is now over. There are no more poems that are going to come out from that person, that there is no more statement that is going to be made. When I read the news of Evan's death, there was one particular line of this poem that spoke to me so loudly, and that is the moment where it says that the last heat of his flesh was his last gift to her. It's just a little touch of his skin that is now turned by a poet into a gift, and a gift to send both of them into the next world. It is a beautiful poem about death, and it's a beautiful poem about love, but it's a restrained poem. It's a poem that doesn't want to overindulge in emotions, and it wants to simply show that in a pandemic, you sometimes have to escape. This happens 150, 170 years ago. The poem is written in 2008, but it refers to 1847. And yet you feel as if that couple could be just living right now. Somebody holding, embracing their father or their mother or their sister or their daughter for the last time before they are sent to a hospital or before they see them for the last time before they die.
You know, we've been talking about a lot of writers, and if you don't mind, I'd like to turn on you for a minute. How has this pandemic affected you?
This pandemic, in a bizarre way, Charles, has set me free. I have the impression that I have been so attuned to what is happening around me. And because of the moment in life in which I find myself, my children already placed in their own lives, deciding what they do with themselves, with my wife here, and at a moment coming close to 60, where I feel I have written or I have produced most of what I was set to do, and not yet ready to say goodbye, I have all of a sudden the feeling that the pandemic has visited me and told me, all right, what is happening after now is a surplus. From here on, you don't have to be tied to the past. You have done what was expected from you. And now you can invent. Now you can improvise. Now you can be a kind of jazzy writer that even surprises himself by doing things that were never expected or planned. In some ways, I am thankful to the pandemic, to COVID. It has brought a kind of freedom that I am hoping to use in terms of mileage from this moment on.
I don't want to push you on that because it sounds kind of beautiful. You're liberated and free. But there are a lot of people out there, a lot of people out there who this affected them. It was hell. And it still is hell.
Sure.
They're hungry. They're dying. How do you, as a creative person, also rub up against a person in Palestine who this is not a liberating experience for them?
Sure. And a person in Mexico City, and a right. person not too far from here in Brooklyn or in the Bronx, who, because she is a person of color, this has affected her in ways that are unfair and structurally racist. Yes, writers carry on their shoulders, the burden of an entire culture, but writers also have to take a distance. I am very attuned to the moment in which we're living. I feel very empathetic and very connected and feel that my responsibility is to give voice to others, like this book that is allowing people to see what is happening in different parts of the world. But at the same time, I cannot ignore that there is also something deep that is happening in me and that is maybe happening in other people too, that the pandemic is inviting us to see the world under a different lens, with a different veil, so to speak.
The problem is, of course, is that this creativity, which is happening, it's amazing all around us, is coming out of trauma, right?
Yeah.
That's what's happening, you know, that the brain gets rewired as a response to trauma. And it reminds me of this argument of like, you want to be a jazz great, you got to do heroin, and great poetry only came out of World War I. Is that really how this works, that out of struggle, out of pain, this creativity comes? Can't it come out of sunshine and love?
I think that creativity always comes out of pain, always comes out of trauma. And I think that's something that maybe the pandemic has elevated, but there is in many writers, I don't know, many of them will define it in many different ways, the feeling that what we are in, what our brain is a race against death, against oblivion, and what we do here and now through words, through paintings, through whatever strategies we have, is fight that oblivion, fight that that absence that ultimately we're all going to be about.
Ilan Stavins is the editor of the anthology, and we came outside and saw the stars again. And that was Charles Monroe Kane talking with him.